Okay, good morning, everyone. And first, I'd like to thank the organizer that gave me this opportunity to be here. And it is my honor to talk about our project, sequencing the genome of Aegilops tarsi. So I think you already have learned from lots of talk by Dr. Kumar that the wheat genome is large and complex. So let's first revisit the phylogeny of the wheat. The common wheat, also known as the bread wheat, is a hexaploid crop. At around 0.5 million years ago, the two diploid progenitor, Grotu and Stautitis, formed the tetraploid animal wheat by hybridization. And then at around 8 to 10,000 years ago, the tetraploid wheat hybridized again with the Aegilops tarsi and formed the hexaploid wheat. So because the tarsi genome was the most recent addition to the wheat genome, to understand the tarsi genome and to understand tarsi genome content and structure will provide genetic fundamental of the wheat genome. And based on the phylogeny and the other knowledge, we chose the tarsi accession LA78 as our material. So its genome was estimated to larger than 4 gigabase, and it contains more than 80% repetitive sequences. So it is really a big challenge to sequence and assemble this large and complex genome. And before I joined this project, our group has been studying the tarsi genome for over 16 years. So they previously have constructed the genetic map and the physical map for tarsi genome. So briefly, they fingerprinted nearly 500,000 of the backbones and assembled them into over 3,000 backbone tags. So as was shown in this figure, this is partial of backbone tag. These are all backbones. They were lined up along the backbone tag. And this cones in red represents the minimum tailing path, MTP. So the MTP clones covered entire length of the cone tag with minimum overlap. This is also the fundamental of our sequencing strategy. So we sequence only the MTP clones. Overall, we have selected over 42,000 MTP backbones, and they were separated into over 5,000 pools in orders. And each pool contains 8 backbones, plus or minus. We use the MiSeq platform for the sequencing. And when we did the sequence, we assemble these sequences. Here's our assembly strategy. So within the back pool, we first assemble the parent reads into context source scaffolds, and then we align these context source scaffolds with the BGI mid pairs to further scaffold them into longer sequences. So because our sequencing was based on back clones, which were overlapped with each other, so the assembled scaffolds from different poles might have overlaps. So next step we do is to merge scaffolds across the poles. Here's a statistic of our sequencing assembly. What I described just now is for the first two iterations. So for the pole-based assembly, it yielded a total length in 5.7 gigabase, and the scaffold N50 is about 200 kilobases. And after we did the globally merge to eliminate the redundancy, the total length dropped to 4.3, and N50 increased to about 400 kilobases. And we also did whole genome shotgun sequences, which was assembled by the NR gene. This assembly has a higher N50, but also a higher N percentage in this assembly. So we decided to merge these two assemblies together. When we doing the merge, we also consider the information from the PacBio reads. I have to mention here that we are doing the PacBio whole genome sequencing as well, and it is still undergoing. So after we did the merge, we finally got a sequence assembly that with N50 2.9 megabases and its N percentage up to 1.1. So now that we have the sequence assemblies, but we have a question here, is this assembly good or not? Does it make any sense? Because they're assembled from short reads, and the short reads, the assembly algorithm, it was known that when dealing with the repeat regions, they don't perform well, very well. So here we need a sequence independent tool to assess this assembly. And if possible, we need, if possible, to improve this sequence assembly. So that's why we introduced the bound energy map, which I'd also like to highlight in our project. I will not go into much details of this technology, and if you're interested, we may have some discussion later. So this picture you're looking at actually is our raw data to assemble the nanomap. So these blue lines here are the long DNA molecules. These green dots here are the restriction sites. So different DNA molecules have different patterns here. We use this to assemble the nanomap. And after several iterations and optimizations of the assembly parameters, we finally got a nanomap with its total length 3.9 gigabases and then 52.17 megabases. And in order to align the NGS scaffolds with the nanomap, we first in silico digested NGS assemblies into the same format as the nanomap to make them comparable. So here you see the green box is the nanocontic and the blue box is the NGS scaffolds. These lines within these boxes are the restriction sites. And the lines between them are the matches. So you see here, this is a perfect match. However, things are not always perfect at the first beginning. This is a more common situation, that a very long nanocontic aligned with several NGS scaffolds here. And if we take a closer look, we will find some issues in these three scaffolds. So like in this scaffold, this tiny little part present in the nanocontic, but it was not present in the NGS scaffolds. And look at its patterns, it is the repeat sequences. So this part was missing the NGS scaffolds. And this, in this scaffold, only this part can be aligned with the nanomap, and this part cannot, indicate that this is misassembled. And in this scaffold, it's obviously an inversion. So these examples tell us that we can use the nanomap to validate NGS assembly and correct them accordingly. We can also use the nanomap to estimate the repeat regions in the genome. So in this case, this is a nanocontic, which this part of this nanocontic was aligned with the NGS scaffold. But this part, we cannot find any NGS scaffolds aligned with it. And if we zoom in a little, we see that it is nothing but repeats. And this repeats region spans over 350 kilobases. So after we correcting the problematic scaffolds, we started to construct a super scaffold. There are two basic situations here. In this case, this nanocontic aligned with four NGS scaffolds. And the orientations and orders of these NGS scaffolds are determined. The orders 1, 2, 3, 4, and these arrows indicate the orientations either this way or this way. So the only thing we did here is to stitch them together. So these four NGS scaffolds formed one super scaffold that spans 11 megabases. And another situation was shown in this figure, that two nanocontics were aligned with four NGS scaffolds. And first we stitched four NGS scaffolds together to form a super scaffold. And then, if we look at this hanging out part here and here, in most of the cases, we may find another nanocontic aligned here. And if the nanocontic aligned here has also the handheld part. It can also align another NGO scaffold. So we can walk both ways to stitch more and more scaffolds here and grow the the super scaffolds longer and longer. Actually, this situation we like more. So this is a figure shows the changes of the N50 of these assemblies. So this four dots, the first four dots are sequence only assemblies. So the N50 increased from 200 kilobases to about 3 megabases. And after we introduced the NanoMap, the N50 increased dramatically from 3 megabases to 32 megabases. So now we have got an assembly with longer scaffolds. And since we have corrected the problematic scaffolds, we also got an assembly with less chimerics. So here's a summary of our sequence assembly after we build super scaffolds. So we have about 95% of the assembled sequences ordered and oriented into 284 scaffolds. And we still have 200 megabases scaffolds. We cannot place them into the chromosomes. And with the estimation of the NanoMap, we have at least 776 megabases that are not covered by the NGO scaffolds, and most of them are repetitive sequences. And the last step we did is to build a pseudo molecule. And using the SDP markers and the genetic map information, we assigned, ordered, and oriented this super scaffold into 7 chromosomes. And here's the statistics and the length of each pseudo molecule and N percentage and gaps with a known length and the scaffolds with a known order orientations in each pseudo molecules. So these unknown order orientation scaffolds are mostly in the centromere region. The genetic map has nothing to do with it. So we're still working on this part and trying to figure out the orders and orientations of them. Well, how to access data? This is a project website, and all the scaffolds informations are there, and you can blast with the scaffolds, and you can batch download them. And the pseudo molecule and the GBrowser will be available soon. This project is a result of collaborations. So we work very closely with the professional teams in America, from Canada, from Europe, and also from China. And I also like to thank the NSF for the financial support. And thank you all for your attention.
Time for a quick question, if anyone has one. Can you repeat the question?
Yes, we're annotating these genomes and we are going to do the evolution.